This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. North Carolina's budget directly eliminates more than 2,200 state jobs, but analysts estimate that over the next 2 years, North Carolina will lose about 30,000 jobs, half of them state and local public sector, and about a third in health care. Jason McDougald is one of those workers. For 7 years, he was the educational coordinator at Woodson Wilderness Challenge. It's a camp run by North Carolina's Department of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention. But this March, Woodson Wilderness Challenge closed for good, the result of state budget cuts. Jason McDougald is on the phone. Today, he is at the near the Pisgah National Forest. Jason, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Frank. Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Tell us a bit about the Woodson Wilderness Challenge.
Sure. Woodson was a prevention and transition program that was based on the Outward Bound model. It had a 35-year history of working with youth in North Carolina, and it had an 80% success rate. And like you mentioned, the funding was cut in March. To be fair, I don't think the department wanted to make those cuts. The department has historically been, the Department of Juvenile Justice has historically been underfunded. We've never put the money into juvenile justice that we need to. And to her credit, Secretary Hayes was doing an admirable job of trying to implement a therapeutic treatment model with very limited resources.
When you say an 80% success rate, what's a success rate? What is a success?
6 months post-release, which was as long as we could follow students because we were part of the Department of Juvenile Justice, 80% of those students had received no further complaints filed against them.
And how is the Wilderness Challenge different than what other kids might experience in the system?
Well, it's a therapeutic environment, which means that it takes place in a community-based setting without, fences and razor wire. So we're able to treat kids with a lot more trust and a lot more respect, and we're able to work with them in a much more therapeutic way, which is not only more humane, but is more effective.
So you have an 80% success rate. How does that compare to the overall success rate in the juvenile justice system?
Sure. Nationally, if you look at kids who are just coming out of incarceration, it's about 50%. So we added about 30 percentage points of value.
What percentage of the kids in North Carolina's juvenile justice system end up at the Wilderness Challenge?
We worked with about 100 to 110 kids a year. So we were a very, very small program. I think last year, if you look at the number of students who were arrested in North Carolina, that number topped about 30,000. So we were a very small but effective program.
Much more effective. Now, how much more costly? What does it cost or what's the cost comparison? And what happens to kids who don't go to the challenge?
The cost was pretty similar. We were, depending on what numbers you looked at, we were in the same ballpark or maybe a couple of dollars more expensive. But, you have to look at what's the cost per success, not necessarily what's the cost per student. So the costs were pretty comparable. Students who aren't involved in programs like Woodson and who are involved in the court system, now, with these budget cuts, really their only option is incarceration because programs like ours have been cut.
All right, Jason, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Jason McDougald's job was working with the state juvenile offenders at Camp Woodson. It was lost to state budget cuts. He's now executive director of a nonprofit, the Pisgah Center. Well, to help put workers like Jason in context, we've asked Alexandra Sirota to join us in the studio. She's director of the NC Budget and Tax Center. Welcome back to the program, Alexandra. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Frank.
Who in the public sector, as a result of this budget, will lose their jobs?
Well, I think it's important, as Jason's story illustrates, the critical role that the public sector plays in our community. So the jobs that we see directly being cut in this budget are everything from community development planners, practitioners, chaplains at prisons, court counselors, psychologists in juvenile detention centers who are working to get our young people back on track, specialists, scientists who test our water and soil and air to make sure that it's healthy for us. Those are the types of positions that are directly being cut. But as you alluded to at the outset, there are a whole host of additional jobs that will be cut as a result of this budget that include everything from classroom positions to other local government functions.
And so does this budget, the state budget, have an impact on local public sector jobs as well?
Sure. So when the state cuts back not just on the funding for public sector state-funded jobs, that means that the local government, in addition, will need to adjust the funding levels for positions and could lead to cuts to, for example, teachers and teachers' assistants because of the cuts that they've been handed down from the state budget.
Right. You're going to get this much less in your budget. You figure out what to do with it. So unless you eliminate cleaning supplies and there's been cutting going on.
Clearly. So for the past 3 to 4 years, we've been cutting significantly. And so the flexibility in the local at the local level to find additional cuts really is limited.
It's going to be personnel. Teachers are going to lose their jobs. And then more kids in the classroom is going to make their job harder.
Exactly. And I think that's a really important point, that not only are state workers losing their jobs, but the state workers who have kept their jobs are needing to do their work with fewer resources. And that puts a strain on their ability to really serve the community and the community's needs. Fewer textbooks in the classroom, fewer instructional materials make it difficult.
Yeah, you just become less effective and the outcomes would have to suffer. Any idea what the – let's just take education. I mean, is there any way to project what outcomes, sort of how much worse it gets when you start losing teachers and piling up, again, the responsibilities?
It's difficult to say definitively what the full impact will be. But we know that when the education budget was cut significantly, professional development opportunities for teachers, we know professional development is critical to ensuring that students have quality teachers in the classroom who know how to deliver material. We also know from just data released this month that North Carolina had one of the greatest graduation rates in the nation. I think in no small part due to the investments that the state has made in dropout prevention, in early childhood education. Those are delivering returns. When we cut back on that, we must expect to see worse outcomes.
Graduation rates, of course, huge impact and correlation to economic development down the line. So
sure,
you're going to pay for that later. Now, what does this budget do to health care in North Carolina?
Well, we know that through the whole budget analysis that the Budget and Tax Center conducted, that this budget will cut not only the public sector jobs, but private sector jobs as well. And we know that that estimate over the course of the next 2 years is about 30,000 jobs lost, more than half of which are in the private sector.
How does that happen? How does state budget cuts affect private sector jobs?
Sure. So not only there are two ways in which that happens. One, when public sector workers lose their jobs, their earnings go down, they stop spending in their local communities, demand for goods and services in local businesses drops. There's also, in addition, public spending that goes on that supports the local economy and private sector business, both directly through contracts, but also through the support that they provide to businesses that are trying to get their goods to market and trying to innovate in different ways and employ the research conducted in the public sector to innovate in their private goods development. So there's numerous ways that those two sectors intersect, and it's really important that we begin to think about the public and private sector as both integral to a strong economy.
Now, the recession itself was a breakdown in the private sector. The markets failed.
Right.
So the private sector really messed up and was highly inefficient. Public sector moves in to try to create jobs and all that stuff. But here's the argument. Yeah, no matter who caused it, and this time it was the markets and private sector that caused all the trouble, fact is the revenue's not coming in. We got to cut. There's nothing else we can do to keep these programs that sure have long-term benefits. We understand that. But what else are we going to do?
Well, I think that there are a number of choices, and the clear choice is to address the revenue problem. Certainly revenue, the collapse in revenue is the cause of this budget shortfall, and addressing that collapse and making sure that our revenue system is set up to support adequate investments in the public structures that we need to be investing in is critical. So we have long advocated for a balanced approach to the shortfall that includes addressing the revenue problems the state face.
Are you talking about increasing taxes? Is that what you mean?
We're talking about modernizing the revenue system, which would include making the tax system more adequate, improving the income tax, making it more progressive so that it's based on ability to pay, closing corporate loopholes to make sure that we are capturing the economic activity that goes on in the state, these are ways in which we can support a stronger revenue system that supports stronger public structures.
Well, we talked about the loss in both the public and private sector in jobs, and we think about protecting jobs and protecting benefits. We think about collective bargaining. Of course, that doesn't happen in North Carolina. I wonder, how do North Carolina's public sector workers compare to the same workers, public sector workers in states with unions or collective bargaining power?
Well, it's a difficult comparison to make, but because we don't have evidence of what would happen in North Carolina with collective bargaining rights. But it's certainly the case that that provides workers an opportunity to ensure that they're adequately compensated for the work that they're providing and that their rights are protected, especially in times when, as we've seen nationally, public workers become demonized in budget battles. It's really critical that workers have the support of their unions to really negotiate and ensure that their rights are protected.
As you pointed out, as their earning power lessens, then everybody's affected up and down the line. Alexandra, so good to talk with you. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Alexandra Sirota is the director of the NC Budget and Tax Center. Just ahead, the role of religion during the Civil War. Our North Carolina Voices series continues. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.
I got a crown, you got a crown.